everybody. This is Armand Demel.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you on this
snowy
Valentine's Day. Here, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. And what other issue could we address today than the newest issues about, yep, love?
I was going to say split pea soup.
Split pea soup.
Well, because of the famous pea, P-E-A.
Oh, you're there already. Here we go.
It just came to me.
I know it does. We're going to have to do it, my friend. Split pea soup is what the issue is today. There are two issues we're going to talk about to you today. We're going to talk about the very latest in love science. The very, very latest. First, let me read you something. Here's a description. You meet someone through a potent alchemy of attraction. It's a sweet reaction, and it's always a surprise. You're filled with a sense of possibility, and it's of hope of being lifted out of the mundane and into a world of emotion and enthrallment. Love grabs you, and you feel powerful. You cherish the rush. You want to hold on to it. You want to hold on to the feeling, but you're also scared. The more you become attached, the more you have to love. So you set out to make love more secure. You seek to fix it, to make it dependable. You make your first commitments and happily give up a little bit of freedom in exchange for a little bit of stability. You create comfort through devices like habit, ritual, pet names that bring reassurance. But the excitement was bound to a certain measurement of insecurity. Your high resulted from the uncertainty, and by now, by seeking to harness it, you wind up draining the vitality out of the relationship because things become too secure. You enjoy the comfort, but complain that you feel constrained. You miss the spontaneity. And in your attempt to control the risks of passion, you've tamed it out of existence. Marital boredom is born. While love promises us relief from aloneness, it also heightens our dependency on one person. It is inherently vulnerable. We tend to assuage our anxieties through control. We feel safer if we can contract the distance between us, maximize the certainty. We try to minimize the threats and certainly try to contain the unknowns. Yet some of us defend against the uncertainties of love with such a zeal that we cut ourselves off from its richness. There's a powerful tendency in a long-term relationship to favor the predictable over the non-predictable. Yet eroticism thrives on the unpredictable. Desire butts heads with habit and repetition. It's unruly, and it defies our attempts to control it. A sense of physical and emotional safety is basic to healthy pleasure and connection, yet without the element of uncertainty, there is no longing, no anticipation, no frisson. The motivating expert, Anthony Robbins, put it succinctly when he explained that passion in a relationship is commensurate with the amount of uncertainty you can tolerate. And this comes from Mating in Captivity by Esther Perel, who was a recent guest. And it brings the question, what is it about certainty that leaves people feeling bored, numb?
Well, as you know, Armand, I like to look at chemistry behind things, behind behaviors, behind feelings. I like to look at what the body is doing behind the mind, in a way, or underneath the mind, or perhaps above the mind. And so I look at the chemistry of all these different states that you just described as you were reading through that passage, which was very well written, actually. Miss Perel did a very good job there. So, you see, when we fall in love with someone or when we are attracted to someone, If you could take a CAT scan of our brain and nervous system, you would see it flooded with chemicals that are not normally there. Or I should say they are there, but not in those amounts. They peak, all kinds of serotonin and endorphins and dopamines, and at different times we have peaks of different chemicals. And one in particular, the one that of the split pea soup, the PEA, seems to be involved in the time when we feel most attracted to another person.
Well, there it is, my friends. Cat out of the bag. The new word in love is PEA, P-E-A. And why it's called PEA? Because it's already, Roberta, you're going to help me with this. Phenylethylamine.
Phenylethylamine.
That's why they call it PEA.
It's an amino acid.
It's an amino acid, but you know, it's an interesting thing about the amino acid because it's kind of related to the catecholamines, isn't it?
It's
and the catecholamines is where they used to put the Christians underneath.
Exactly.
And in Rome, when they were about to feed them to the lions.
That's exactly what they are. Yes, Armand, you absolutely got it there. And so both catecholamines, which is the epinephrine, the or adrenaline, the neurotransmitters that make us feel excited, as well as PEA, phenylethylamine, are regularly disposed of by enzymes we have in our system that make sure that we are not constantly overexcited or over blissful. Somehow it seems that nature wants to keep us on an even keel, except for special occasions.
So PEA is got to be something that comes and goes.
Right.
And it's got to come and go, and so when you have a love thing that makes you feel a certain way, and this PEA makes you feel this special way,
It peaks.
And if you're with somebody where you tend to have more PEA than is normal, it tends to disappear further. And
Well, let's say that you see someone, and for some reason that person really attracts you, and love at first sight right there, and you feel all kinds of things, and you kind of for a moment feel disoriented, and you don't know what's happening to you, and you can't take your eyes off of that person, and they remind you of someone, or maybe you've met them in a past life or maybe in a future life, and you just can't quite figure out what is it with them, and yet there's something that tells you it's him or it's her. That's when phenylethylamine is going rampant in your brain. Now, why are you secreting so much of it is the question I ask myself next. Why is it that a person can trigger that hypersecretion in us? And in some of us, it could be PEA. In some of us, it could be another neurotransmitter. But it's true that love makes us hypersecrete hormones and neurotransmitters.
And PEA always seems to be present. Now, let me take just a little side trip here for a minute, Roberta, if you don't mind.
Sure, I don't mind.
Let's talk about four different ways that people love.
Sure.
I'm just going to make it up. People can love in four different ways, and I call them I'll use the same words that they use for addiction. Okay, now one is you could love for security. Now, loving for security is you love somebody because you want to wrap yourselves in their arms and you want to lay down and you want to hold them and you feel secure with them and it feels fabulous. Sex is part of the journey to this kind of embrace security place. So I call that the security love. And those are the kind of people who want to have a nice home and they watch television and they stay home and they want to be secure and that's a beautiful thing. That's one. And then there's another kind of love called excitement love. And an excitement love, it's kind of a push-me-pull-you. It's got a lot of challenge to it. It's exciting. You're never really totally sure. Then there's another one called the danger love. The danger love is where it's a kind of a one-way love where you fall in love with somebody, but it's risky. And it could have a lot of risk to it, like you could be in love with somebody who's having a, you know, you shouldn't be having a relationship with for some reason or another, and could be dangerous. It has elements of danger, like, you know, public stuff, and you don't want to get caught and that kind of stuff. And then there's a fourth kind of love, which is called the existential love, which is kind of a, you know, I love you the way I love the universe, and you are a part of the universe. It was kind of a 60s love. In the 60s and 70s, everybody was loving everybody. And, you know, when you said, I love you, you could say that to the same person as you would say to the next person a minute later. So with these four different kinds, the danger love, the excitement love, the existential love, and the security love, you have four different kinds, but all have different chemistry, but one thing common in all four, PEA.
Right.
Except PEA is not present in the excitement and is not present in the danger. Now, the reason being because, well, I don't think it's as present. Because I think danger leads to separation. See, I'm getting ahead of the game.
Well,
you know why I'm getting ahead of the game. Because what we want to know is how do we keep the love going?
Okay. And one of the things that Armand and I did this morning as we were preparing for the show is we tried to figure out what leads a person to be choosing or to be experiencing more of one of these different kinds of love as opposed to another. And one theory that came up, and mind you, it was just a theory, but, well, we're going to run it by you, is this. What if, as a child growing up, you, let's say, had a family that was nurturing and supportive in some ways, but not other ways. Let's say that in your family there was a lot of, let's say there was a lot of silence, so you had a quiet time at home and meals were silent and the house was quiet. And so what you're missing is the noise, the excitement, the vivacious, you know, meals where people are shouting and talking all at the same time. So wouldn't it make sense then that you would be attracted to what you didn't have? Because our nervous system likes completeness. It likes to develop as completely as it can according to its genetic structure. And if we were not able to grow completely according to what we are, to what our genetic potential has given us, there's always a part of us that's looking for what's missing. And it's possible, Armand and I were thinking, that we may seek a partner who would foster that experience in us, that would flood us with the chemicals that allow the brain to grow the way it wants to grow.
It's a fascinating concept, Roberti, because, you know, when you think about it psychologically, we've always talked about if you grow up in a house of violence, you seek out a house of security. But you usually wind up repeating the house of violence instead.
Right.
You wind up repeating the same thing you had, but you're searching. And I think you're right. I think there is a chemistry that is missing. When we are neurochemically out of balance, what happens when your family swings in one direction or another and you don't have the balance, you spend the rest of your time looking for it. Just think about the things you want out of life. My friends, if you grew up in a family that was an unloving family, maybe you're looking for security. If you grew up in a family where there was too much danger, maybe you're looking to just settle down. You know, maybe just being at peace is a beautiful thing.
Well, isn't it like a widely accepted assumption, Armand, in psychological thinking, that whenever a person experienced, let's say, abuse as a child, true that they have a tendency perhaps to keep repeating the pattern by choosing relationships where there is abuse, but perhaps that's in an attempt to do it right this time.
Well, that's to get
what's missing, to allow the brain to win over the situation in which we had no control. You see, if I can keep doing it until I master it, until I finally overcome the hurdle that didn't allow me to grow the way I was meant to grow, well, then I'll be complete. Of course, that strategy can be tricky.
I think you're right, Roberta. I think that's exactly what people wind up doing. It's called a repetition compulsion, a compulsion to repeat. Freud used to think we repeat it because we want to recreate. And I think it's true what you're saying. We repeat it so that we can grow beyond it.
Right.
And now, if we go back to what we're learning, and of course, you know, neuroscience is just phenomenal what it's teaching us. Now we can look and say, you know what we're really looking to do is not just a psychological formulation here. We're looking to grow chemicals.
And
we
dendrites
are looking,
and
yes,
neurons and
yeah,
connections.
We're really, if you look at the brain, this is through neuroscience and through imaging, we can now see the human is making an attempt to progress, to move on, to actually develop itself.
Well, Armand, one thing we know from looking at the brain, which we can look at today better than ever, is that contrary to what we used to believe, the brain and nervous system in adults continues to grow and mature and change and develop throughout life. So since love gives us these rewards, extreme rewards at times in the form of these peaks in chemicals, well, could it be that we fall in love with certain people and in certain situations where we get the chemicals that foster the growth that we need? So perhaps what we're falling in love with really is that attempt to grow to what we can be, to everything that we can be, that we didn't have a chance to do when we were children. And in fact, what more than love fosters growth and development? We do know that children grow best when they are loved. So in a love relationship, I believe, we have a chance to grow.
And in case this just sounds a little airy-fairy, love makes the world grow. Well, we're not just talking about love. We're talking about PEA. We're talking about PEA. We're talking about the presence of the love hormones, which seem to be part of the chemistry of a well-balanced, solidly feeling human being.
Actually, we could give hundreds of references, if not thousands,
yeah.
But that would
but
be boring.
But actually, anybody who wants to look
that,
it up.
That would be boring.
You know,
so
look
we'd,
up
we'd
PEA and just
references.
Look up PEA and go to it. This is Armand DeBille with Roberta Maria Atti. It is Valentine's Day here at WBAI, and we are talking about phenylethylamine, PEA.
Phenylethylamine.
What a funny word that is. Phenylethylamine.
Amine. It's an amino acid. It's a protein.
It's an amino
all
acid.
All neurotransmitters are amino acids, are combinations of different amino acids, by the way.
In case you didn't know. And we're also going to be talking about, and later in the show, you don't want to miss this, about the need for people to be contained and what that's all about. We're going to get to that in just a little later. Right now we want to stick with, are you into peeing, PEA? No. No. Three kinds
of. Are you into pea soup?
Pea soup is right. So we know this now. We know that there is a certain love hormone that is in there. And now, what's the cure? What's the cure when people get too bored with each other? What is it that nature recommends? And what is it that you need to do to grow the PEA? And there's an answer.
Sure there is.
There is an answer.
Which is very logical in biological terms.
You separate. That's what you do. It makes so much sense.
Yes, it is. Well, of course, because the body, as I said before, has a tendency whenever there is a chemical that is produced and secreted in abundance, abnormally so, the body has a tendency to want to bring things back to balance. So it will eventually, over time, get us used to even being in love. So much so that the chemicals slowly will come down from the peak that they got at when we fell in love. They come down and sooner than we think, we wake up one morning and, yes, we care about this person, but that excitement, that feeling, that intensity is not there because the chemicals are not there.
We talk about oxytocin.
However,
oxytocin's a good thing. It's a nice feeling. You get this oxytocin feeling. It's a little like OxyContin. You've heard all about that. You kind of feel mushy, and you're loving each other, and it's nice, and it's pleasant.
Oxytocin, the bonding hormone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, that's there. But however, like Roberta's saying, go ahead, Roberta.
I was saying that maybe bonding is excellent. It's a great experience in a mother and child relationship. But between husband and wife, bonding sometimes can be stifling to the passion.
So look at what happens.
So if the two of them separate for a time, the distance is such is enough to cause a dropping of the chemicals. So now the body is back to absolute normalcy. And then when the two come together again, because the body has now gotten used to the lower level of chemicals, now there can be a spike again, which is, of course, caused by the rejoining of the lovers. And so now there is a rekindling of that flame, and it's going to last for, you know, however it's going to last. So actually, separation is a good cure for the love's blahs.
And that's why Valentine's Day is a good thing. Go ahead, ask me.
Okay.
Where's the segue, Armand?
All
here
right.
We go.
What is it?
Here we go. Now, look, many people, they get into relationships and they get bored, and they fall into addictions. They're bored with each other, and they don't know they're bored because, you know, the PEA has kind of slipped away. And they're kind of nice. Hi, honey. Watch television. And they do this kind of boring thing. And then one or the other moves on to addictions of some kind. I think I'll watch porn. I think I'll watch television. I think I'll do this. I think I'll do that. I'll overeat. Now, this is very interesting. Because they move towards an addiction, they move away from the relationship. The other partner, to take care of themselves, may go to something like, let's say, Al-Anon. And Al-Anon fosters become independent. Be strong in your own right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to help you make it better with your mate.
So if the physical addiction is not possible, there's ways to create an emotional distance?
Yes. And you create a distance by both of you going off and saying, well, you know, it's not going to work in my own house anymore, so I'm going to go off and create my own world. Both people separate, create their own worlds, and then when they come together, they're renewed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a great idea. Separation in the form of independent kind of things that people do is a wonderful idea. And then comes Valentine's Day. Now, Valentine's Day, why is it a good thing? Because it's a small day. It's a little day. It comes out of nowhere, you know. But, you know, hey, we haven't been together. Look, let's go out to dinner. Here's a little something I bought you.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a little something. Let's look at each other. Let's think about each other. Let's talk on the phone. And Valentine's Day becomes a day, not because it's a commercial day, but it's one of those days that people can get back together again
mm-hmm.
after they've been apart
right.
and see where their pee level is. You didn't think
well
I was going to wind up there? How's your pee?
You well, surprised me.
All right. I hope you get the point, my friends. In other words, what they are recommending and what all the scientists are recommending and what we're learning is that separation is a good thing.
Yes.
And that confabulation and being so close together and being tied together and working together and living together and doing everything together is not such a hot idea, according to what we're learning. That really having independent ideas, even having separate names,
mm-hmm.
you know, is not a bad idea.
Yes. Well,
you know, some
I mean,
people have chosen that. They've chosen to keep the guys choose their maiden names. And
you know, when people is it time for
no.
a break or Matt?
No, here's a clock.
When people are in love, isn't it to almost expect the other to fulfill every need, every moment of the day, every thought, every feeling, it's like we get so much from that relationship. But eventually, I think, Armand, when we separate, we go out into the world and we do things, and then we bring new stuff into the relationship. We bring the world into the relationship rather than the relationship being the world. And when we bring new things, new ideas, new self into the relationship, we have more to offer to their relationship. That's a theoretical explanation.
I know you're saying it theoretically, but I also see it chemically as you're saying it, Roberta. Because in truth, when we separate and we come back together again, we come back renewed. You know, I have a sneaking suspicion that the way the chemistry works is the following. I'm going to give you a chance to flush out your PEA. You know, I'm going to give you a chance to meet somebody.
That's a good one, yeah.
And you're going to be so bond that if you're really stupid, what you're going to do is deplete yourself and wind up bored and wind up becoming a couple that does nothing. And then the rest of you, the good ones, the ones who are going to become the next generation, you're going to separate a little bit and bring back a renewed energy together, and you're going to be the ones that represent the next generation. So I think there's a way that the PEA works at creating the next generation. Because if people settle into the comfort of the loss of the PEA, which is the loss of that love chemical, and right, just the kind of ennui that comes with it, if they settle into that, then they're just meant to go off onto the ice together. But the couple that goes and takes trips and goes journeys and does exciting things and does something new or separates and comes back together or has independent ideas and independent creations and does things, that's the couple that I think will create the next generation, whether they have babies or not, even if they're older, even if they're teachers, they create it. Even if they're teachers to other people, they're created. They don't have to have the babies themselves.
Right. Yes, I agree with you. And I think that the piece that you read from the book at the beginning of the show says when you get used to one another so much that you know everything about the other, you almost get angry at them for always doing things the same way, and for you can get irritated from the closeness that ensues after you are in that committed close relationship for so long that you don't see anything else. That's the time when a little bit of a time apart could do wonders for a relationship. Wonders.
You know, Roberta Maria Atti.
Yes.
Armand DeMille, Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we've chosen something new and unusual and different for you in the form of music. Écoutez, mon camarade, I'm going to play for you. Guess what that means?
Well,
listen up, buddy.
Right.
Right? Écoutez, mon camarade. I'll be playing that for you as soon as we get back. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Cette fille, tu m'entends, elle va te rendre malade et tu vas souffrir longtemps. Je sais bien que tu l'aimes, tu lui as donné ton âme. Je sais bien que tu l'aimes, tu lui as donné ton âme. Mais ne t'as jamais aimé, camarade.
Elle profite de toi, tu es content. Même ses paroles, elles sont froides. Tu dois les sentir pourtant. Et réfléchis, c'est important. Tu as choisi une épine, hélas. Ce n'est pas une rose de printemps.
Je sais bien que tu l'aimes. Tu as donné ton âme. Je sais bien que tu l'aimes. Tu as donné ton âme.
Ne compte plus sur ses promesses. Elle t'aimera pas en menaçant. Elle t'a joué la double face. Elle changera à chaque instant.
Sonny Rollins, probably the greatest living legend of jazz. Join me, Armand DeMille, on The Positive Mind, Tuesday, February 20th at 1 p.m. The Mind of Music, with our guest, Sonny Rollins. Yep. Right here on WBAI 99.5 FM, Tuesday, February 20th at 1 p.m. Look, Ma, I'm playing with Sonny Rollins. That's so impressive. Everybody.
Yes, it is. I'm very impressed.
Sonny Rollins, WBAI 99.5 FM. This is Armand DeMille with you, with Roberta Maria Atti, in case you just tuned in. That was a promo for our series that we're going to be doing on the mind of jazz. It is going to start off with Sonny Rollins. We have a couple of things lined up, including maybe one of the neighbors here, Tony Bennett, said he might be able to be on our show, and a few other people. I want to talk to them about music.
What a great idea.
You know, and then we have a wonderful artist going to be on the program with us. She's going to talk about art, and she's just such a great artist. Just for you to learn about things about your mind, my friends, and we've learned things like, we have Patricia Miranda. Patricia Miranda works with, you know, egg tempera. You know what that is? She makes paint out of eggs.
Mm.
And she rolls, she says she teaches people, and she is such a spiritual person when it comes to working with paints. We have a couple of her paintings hanging here, and
they're beautiful.
And she's going to be on air, and she's going to talk about it, and it's just a beautiful thing. You know, artists are just an amazing thing. Having an art, that's part of, you know, having the difference. Part of creating a difference in a relationship is having an art on the side, having a thing you do. You know, like you read books on cooking, and you know, or you play chess, or you do something. You have things that you do that are separate, and these separate things bring back the P to your relationship, the PEA.
Right.
So separation and doing different things instead of doing everything together really works.
Sure, because you have a chance to, you yourself, grow through that activity that you love or that you believe in, and then you bring that extra piece of you, the piece of you that you were able to grow through your own efforts and activity, to the relationship to share with the other, as opposed to expecting the other to help you create it.
But you know, when you say grow, Roberta, people think of it as always you grow psychologically, but you grow chemically.
Well, neurologically.
Yeah, neurologically. Sure. Stretch those brains.
Neurochemically.
Neurobiologically.
Neurobiochemically.
Phenylenolamine. Pepilinine.
I wonder, these words, now that we have these sciences that are so intermingled, these words are going to get longer and longer and longer.
Hey, stick with us, friends. We're going to talk about the power and desire for personal containment, which is such a very interesting thing. We're going to get to that in a minute. So one of the things we're learning, and one of the things you said, Roberta, was you talked about bonding and parenting. But you see, but the interesting thing about bonding and parenting is that when a child is bonded, an infant is bonded to its mother, it is bonded primarily through the breast milk.
Mm-hmm.
And in that period of time, you get this kind of a bonding, and you get this, I'm sure this oxytocin is very high. And then you get this, you get a lot of the PEA, the love feeling is there, and the mother feels it with the child, and the child feels it with the mother. And it isn't just nature's way to say to the mother, wean your child, put your child aside. And put your child aside and put him down, and then have that child go off and search for another source of milk. You know, go have it start getting into the world, getting away from mother's milk. By the way, what is nut milk? You know, to talk about another source of milk, so you make nut milk, don't you?
I just started my own production of nut milk.
I've tasted your nut milk 2 years ago.
Well, it hit the ground flying because apparently people are looking for alternatives to dairy that are not soy, and nut milk is such a great solution. It's so rich in the essential fatty acids. Well, it's basically you take the nuts and you sprout them, any kind of nut, the almonds, the hazelnuts, the walnuts, you sprout them so that the enzymes go to work, so it's a living food, and you squeeze the juice out of the nuts, you separate it from the pulp, and you mix it with a little bit of maple syrup or raw honey, and you have a great drink. And, you know, when you were talking about mother's milk, really, yes, there's a sweet flavor there, but there's also chemical communication to the baby from the mother in that milk. And in nut milk, in a way, is the same thing, because you have nutrients in nut milk that are so essential for the brain and the nervous system, which is the system that needs to develop in babies, and that it's the most hungry, it's the hungriest in the body.
There are not a lot of mothers I know where I would call it nut milk. I know
what you mean.
I mean, when you pass along, because, you know, I guess if you're really tense and really...
Do you know what I called mine?
You called your what?
My nut milk. I called it angel latte.
Angel latte, because...
Yeah. Because it's milk of the angels.
Milk of the angels.
Anyway, yes, I just started and I'm really happy about it.
Okay, so PEA, again... Parents and children automatically separate, which is kind of the proof of nature's design, that we need separation in order for there to be that kind of growth, and we need separation with couples so they can come back together and separate and come back together and separate and come back together. It's a fabulous thing. I know a guy who told me he used to have a relationship with somebody who was an airline hostess or a pilot. That's it. And he said, you know, the pilot would fly away.
Mm-hmm.
It was a gay relationship. The pilot would fly away, and was away 3 days a week. And then he would come back, and they had just this wonderful time. It lasted for like 12 years.
Mm-hmm. So, well, because there's something that happens in separation outside of the PEA reactivation. There's also this sense of, for some people, not for everyone, that all of a sudden... There's this feeling of wanting to be contained by the other. And that's where we were going to talk about that, because we think that's a very important aspect of love relationships. There's something to be said for the world being so stimulating, so overwhelming, so filled with stimuli of all sorts. And imagine... you know, every morning waking up, going out the door and facing the world with all of the possibilities, all of the people, all of the different thousands of things you're going to come across every day. For some people, especially if as a child your nervous system didn't have a chance to fully grow to its completion, for some people that can lead to anxiety, and sometimes that can grow over a period of time if the person is not, if they don't have a chance to come back to a safe spot. So that person may experience the desire to be with the other, the feeling of love for the other, as a need to be contained by the other, to have this shield, this human shield between oneself and the world, in the form of the other person. And this is a particular feeling or a kind of love that some people could call dependent, but it doesn't have to be dependent. It can be, it's a simple, you know, well, Armand, some people even experience shame in this need because there is a part of the...
Yeah, before we go there, we now have dependency, we now have shame, we have all this stuff that we would be going... Let's go back to
defining... But I'm going to the positive of it.
No, but before we even go anywhere, let's define what containment is. What we're talking about is let's start with the dog whisperer.
Why do we talk about dogs?
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why in a minute, okay? There is a sense that both you and I understand. There is a sense that some people have an energetic sense about them where they feel that they're going to lose control. They feel like there's too much going on. And what we've observed and what we seem to observe in people, and again, and I go to the dog whisperer because this is where the idea came to me, which is Cesar Millan's, he kind of shows this thing where he said, all dogs need to want to have somebody to lead them. They want to know that there is somebody there who's strong for them. Now, part of what we're saying is that there is a kind of a synergistic containment. There's a containment that's being desired by many people, and that's what you were talking about when you say there's almost a shame. It's almost like people are afraid to admit it. There's a part of just about everyone where you want to feel safe. You want to feel relaxed. You want to feel comfortable. And we call this the desire for containment. Containment means my energy is so abundant, so strong, I don't know what to do with it. I want to meet somebody who could help me in some way control this energy. So I look for somebody stronger than I am. Or I look for somebody to be the object of my energy. Either way, contains my energy. So what we're saying in this Valentine's Day is that containment and the object, the whole idea of containing energy becomes a very important part of romantic relationship, because what people are looking to do is to do something about this imbalance in energy that they feel. Two ways of getting rid of it. Somebody could contain you, they could hold you in place. And the other way is you could expel it containing somebody. So an example of this is a teenage child, or what they call hyperactive children. A hyperactive child, they have so much energy. And what do? They may be breaking things and doing things, and they're spending the energy all over the place. They don't know what to do with it. They're looking for someone to contain them. They don't want to be contained. On one hand, they're going to fight it like crazy. Part of the way that they are treated and part of the way that they are helped is when a parent holds this person without yelling them, without screaming at them, without making them bad, but contains them and contains their energy and said, I won't let you hurt yourself. I won't let you hurt anyone else. I'm going to hold you in place. It's called synergistic containment. And I think, Roberta and I both think, that this goes far greater. It goes to a lot of romance. What is that feeling of feeling safe about? Do you feel contained? Do you feel like you're part of a contained package? That's the question. And I think that's the question that I wanted to start with, Roberta, you know, before we go into the elements of it, which have to do with, you know, shame and so on and so forth. So with that introduction, would you help me from here? Someone to watch over me.
Well, I think sometimes love can be experienced in that way, because there's been a part of us that hasn't had a chance to develop neurologically to the point where it could have. And the world can be so stimulating, and the neurotransmitters that we secrete when we are in the world can, you know, how do you make a choice what to do next? How do you choose who to see, who to talk to, where to go? You know, everything is a choice. And sometimes when we are in a love relationship, our lover could be that catalyst, that buffer, the one that allows us to experience the most intense emotions, perhaps the ones that we need to experience safely without risking being ridiculed or blamed or criticized. And yet we can go all the way into the depth of our emotional self without risking the world to engulf us in its hugeness. And I think that when we experience that kind of love, it can be mistaken for being needy. And I just wanted to say that I don't think it's being needy. I think it's the nervous system attempting to grow and develop. It's a neurological need that is very legitimate and very healthy, actually.
You know, so, I mean, you're so right, because what makes a neurological need, what makes needy a pejorative and a negative, when neurological need and compensation that we need because something is missing is okay? You know, you're right. I mean, it's so clear. If you're a hyperactive person, if you're a nervous person, there's something wrong with your nervous system, because you were not meant to walk around jumpy, yelling at people, spitting on people. You know, I mean, that's not the way the system was meant to be. If you are hyperactive in your mind, if you're compulsive, if your mind won't stop, or if you feel very nervous, it means that something's wrong on the inside. Now, that something could be fixed through something psychological, but it kind of still suggests that something went wrong with the chemistry. And something went wrong with the chemistry because there was an imbalance somewhere before. That's about what you're saying, aren't you, Roberta? An imbalance is what creates it.
It's an imbalance that's directly related to not having been able to grow as a child neurologically to the fullest potential, because I think genetically we all are born with a potential, an X potential. And if we're not able to grow to that potential, we keep seeking relationships and situations that allow us to challenge ourselves to reach that potential. So in a relationship, there could be a person that maybe we don't know, we can't understand why we need them or why we feel we want to be with them or why we're so attracted to them. And it could be because our nervous system says that person can contain us in such a way that we can grow. Without containment, there can't be growth, it seems like.
It could be one or another way, because the person can contain me, or I could expend my energy containing the person. It's both the same thing. Do you know what I mean?
It's two forms of containment.
So both dominance and submission are symptoms of a neurological imbalance trying to correct itself.
Right.
And the propensity and the attraction to it is not as pathological as you think.
It's not pathological at all.
It is pathological because it's something broken trying to get fixed, which is what pathology is, but it's not crazy.
Well, I think we tend to, you know, maybe put labels on people's behaviors and feelings and thoughts.
Judgmental labels, right.
That only compound the problem, and that if we could just look at the fact that the nervous system in human beings keeps trying to grow to its fullest potential, and it is going to continue to seek the situations it needs in order to do so, then we can look at someone, even risky behavior, even criminal behavior, even behavior that we consider aberrant, could be looked at as an attempt on the part of the nervous system to find a way to grow. So could we perhaps provide, make room for that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, without judging it.
And it's very hard because, what happens to us as therapists very often, we look at it and we try to see the pathology of it. But, therapists are learning that if they don't get up on science and they don't understand what's happening in neuroscience, they're really falling way behind the times.
Oh, it's, yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. The therapist who knows nothing about neuroscience and the mind and the chemistry is dealing with very, very old, antiquated concepts.
Yeah, well, because back when psychological theory was established, I guess, the body and the mind were kept separate and were looked at as separate things. And so the chemistry and the biology of it didn't go with the psychology of it. But now, unless you're able to put the two together, I guess you're kind of left behind.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. So I guess the one thing we're saying for you on this Valentine's Day is two things. If there's a part of you that is saying, oh, if only somebody would watch over me, if only someone would be there for me, I would love that more than anything else. Of course you would. Of course you would. Or if you just wanted to say, I just want somebody to be my baby so I could take care of them, of course you would.
Or if you could say that the world would be right if I had that person in my life. The world would be okay if I could only be with that person. Well, what if it was that person, for some reason, represents something that the nervous system says, hey, I could grow in the company of someone like that. I could grow if I could be with that energy. Well, I don't know. Always a new way to understand ourselves, I guess. And that's what I think, Armand, that's what love does in any case. That whenever we fall in love with anything or anyone or in any situation where love is part of the picture, there is that attempt at completion of something, that attempt at bridging gaps, at filling voids, at reaching the fullest potential of experience, at least.
Well said, Roberta. I want to thank you very much for being with us, Roberta Maria Atti. At your website, Roberta?
Roberta at creativehealthsolutions.org.
And you could repeat today's program on WBAI.org or by going to the website, thepositivemind.com. I'm going to end just a little early because I want to bring you something special for this Valentine's Day for you guys. And I hope we get just 2.5 minutes to play this, Michael. But if not, here's something pretty.
The and Lord. took my love.